This is Upstate's HealthLink on air, Linda Cohen along with you. The school violence that has captured the headlines in recent years has caused many to study it and to try to understand the factors that lead one to become a school shooter. Well, here with me to share his findings and perspective on this very troubling question is Dr. Kevin Anschel, Associate Professor of Psychology and the Director of the Clinical Psychology Program at Syracuse University. And he's also an adjunct associate professor of psychiatry at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Dr. Anschel. Thanks for coming in today.
Yeah, it's my pleasure to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
So what are the factors that will move someone to become a school shooter?
Sure. I can describe what the research has suggested as the factors, and everything that I'm going to be describing today it's really based upon the research, and when there are times in which I give my own opinion, I certainly will make that very clear.
Great.
But the research has identified that there really are three things that are associated with an individual, a child or an adolescent, becoming a school shooter. And those three things, I think likely will make intuitive sense. And the first is an interest in violence, a fascination in violence, having access to weapons, and also having exposure to media violence. And so this is things like video games, television shows.
So when you say a fascination with violence, tell me a little bit more about that.
Sure.
What does that exactly mean?
Yep. I mean, I think it goes beyond a curiosity. I mean, I think all adolescents at some point may be curious about death and may be curious about violence, but a fascination is more obsessive, this becomes more of the person's identity. This is something that, you know, they spend a lot of their time and energy around.
And how about the media violence? I mean, clearly that's been a major, kind of political football, talking about the video games, the very violent movies, and whether we should have more control of those and limiting children from seeing these kinds of things. What does the research suggest?
The research suggests that the types of things that we see as in adults, we have the cognitive capacity to be able to differentiate between reality and fantasy. Children and adolescents, on the other hand, don't have the hardware, don't have the cognitive capacity to be able to make that
differentiation. So developmentally, they're not really able to make that distinction.
The majority of them are not, yes.
So that, therefore, when they see these kinds of video games or shoot 'em up movies,
yes.
What do they take away from that?
You and I may walk away from that and saying, well, that was a movie, that was fantasy. Children and adolescents may be less capable of doing that, and they may walk away thinking that this kind of thing really happens.
And you also mentioned access to weapons. Mm-hmm. So that seems to be another correlate. I mean, something that they found in the research is a big factor.
Yes.
So if given somebody having fascination with violence and also seeing a lot of video games, if they could not get their hands on a weapon, does it mean they're less likely to become a shooter?
Yes. They're less likely to become a shooter, but it also suggests they may have more interest in obtaining.
They'd be driven to do so at any cost, so to speak.
Yes.
So let's talk about who becomes a shooter in terms of, what's the profile? And I understand you don't want to profile kids, but what do we see? Is it obviously it's more often male than female?
Yes.
Tell us about what they look like.
Yes, that's true. They do tend to be much more male than female. And I think if you look at the statistics on violence in general in our society, that's true. And as I mentioned, it's the fascination with violence. It's one trait. But there are other traits that are consistent or are correlated with the school shooters. And the second one is personality traits. And, the personality traits is a sense of righteous indignation. They're superior. They have a lot of narcissistic traits. They're very ego-driven.
Egocentric,
yeah.
I guess one of the things I've always felt was that many kids that you hear about when you read about them after the fact have been somewhat disenfranchised, mm-hmm. that there may be this sense of kind of righteous indignation, but at the same time, they obviously often feel alienated and marginalized within their peer group.
Yes.
Is that what you're finding?
Yes, absolutely. And that's actually the third correlate, is they tend to be rejected by their peers and have a long history of failed relationships. And again, you may say, well, all adolescents have to go through rejection. And you're right, all adolescents do. And that's where the personality traits really make these individuals more vulnerable you know, to having a lot of difficulties in being able to manage their rejection.
Personality traits like?
The narcissism, the ego, egocentric, you know, that they're superior. How dare you reject me and not want to be my girlfriend?
Yeah. How about things like anger control?
Yep. They also tend to have poor control of the anger, of their anger. But I think it's also important to point out that these, the acts of school shooting are not impulsive. And so the anger that they have tend to be a brooding anger that they harbor and they have for long periods of time, as opposed to a reactive anger that they get impulsive and they act out and then later they regret it.
So basically you're saying that you just implied something I hadn't really thought about. You're saying in most cases, these school shooters, it's very premeditated. They spend
Absolutely.
A lot of time
Absolutely.
Planning the attack
and
gathering the ammunition, gathering their weapons. And what are the underlying thoughts or beliefs that would generate this? You mentioned something like righteous indignation. My victims deserve it. But what else?
Yep. There tend to be two beliefs that individuals who do the school shooting. The first belief is an attempt to obtain justice. So an attempt to attain some type of justice against the peer or
and
the adult.
They're the one to mete out the justice, so
yes.
to speak.
Yes. And in about half of the cases of school shooting, the victims were those who had rejected the perpetrator. And so you're able to do... essentially go back in time and be able to piece together where this was the teacher that failed him in ninth grade, and he became very upset after that rejection.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here along with Dr. Kevin Anschel. He's a clinical psychologist, and we're talking about why kids become school shooters, or more likely, what are the characteristics of people who become school shooters?
Sure.
So peer rejection.
Yep.
Seems to be a major role.
Yep. And so obtaining justice is one of the reasons. And the other reason is to obtain status. So they believe that acts of violence will enhance their own self-esteem, that others will like them more if they have this, this type of act.
Is this part, it always makes me think of, again, when we talk about media, the impact of media, that we often... idealize and almost make into, godlike figures, people like the Rambo kind of person who, mm-hmm. Comes in all covered with ammunition and equipment and, is firing out of both hands at the same time. We kind of, we make them heroes.
Sure.
Do you think that's part of what feeds that notion that somehow they will gain greater self-esteem in the community?
I think it could be a contributor to it, but again, I think it also goes beyond, because I think when you or I or other adolescents, maybe they look at that, they say, no, I don't think that's real. I think individuals who do these acts really, they're having a lot of difficulty being able to, the reality and the fantasy line is very blurred.
Right. So what, there are warning signs, though. Clearly. When we talk about prevention, we have to first be able to recognize who these kids are mm-hmm. early on before, obviously, if they're spending a lot of time premeditating some kind of attack, we would like to somehow be able to recognize what the signs are.
Yeah.
What are some of those clinical warning signs?
Well, in the cases of the school shootings, the school shooters gave hints, they conveyed information to peers, they talked to others that they were going to do this.
And so there would be threats made.
There would be threats.
On sometimes social media,
yes,
perhaps?
Yes, exactly. Actually, that's usually where it is, on Facebook or other, so they threats. And so, again, I want to be very clear, it isn't impulsive. And so there are some warning signs. These are not things that's a snap, hasty decision. These are things that are going on for weeks and months.
Are there other warning signs other than the fact that they're threatening?
Well, I think... I think if they're rejected, I think that's a very big one in, continuing to
assess.
If
they're known to be rejected. It strikes me, I want to talk a little bit, I don't want to run out of time, about prevention. Mm-hmm. And obviously one is to recognize the warning signs, but it seems that there a culture of bullying, which has been talked about so many times and so much recently in our middle schools and our high schools. Are these kids often the targets of bullying as opposed to the ones who do the bullying?
No, it's actually both. they actually have some combination of both, that they're a bully but also bullied. And so individuals who were the school shooters who have done these acts have a history of both. And so it's hard to say it's only the bullies that do this or the bullied, because these folks have some combination of both.
So what can we do about it, and what can be done? Do you believe that some of these bullying programs, anti-bullying programs in schools, and developing a culture of compassion within our schools could really make a difference?
I think that's... at this point, you're getting my opinion.
Okay.
And so I think that is important. I think that's very important. And I think the outcome data would suggest that it is helping those individuals, or it's helping some individuals. But again, I think it's important also to look at the outcome data right now, at least, would suggest the bullying programs are helping those that we shouldn't really be worried about in the first place. And so I think we really need to look at doing maybe some different things in the bullying programs, and maybe changing the context and the contents of the bullying programs.
Like what? What are you thinking to reach the more aggressive kids? What would you be doing?
Sure. For example, right now, a lot of the bullying programs around empathy and trying to teach individuals to have empathy.
Because it sounds to me like that's been one of the missing factors.
Yes.
If somebody goes out and takes a gun and it randomly shoots 15 people,
right.
they obviously, it's been said, they don't feel any empathy at that moment.
Yes. And again, that sounds great on paper, and I'm sure it's working for a lot of children we shouldn't be worried about. Unfortunately, the school shooters have a cluster of personality traits in which they tend to be callous and unemotional, and they don't have a lot of empathy.
So what would you do differently? I don't want to run out of time.
Sure, yeah. I think a lot of it really involves not necessarily just working with that individual, him or herself, but the entire context. So teachers, parents, trying to get other people involved rather than targeting that one person as the identified patients or the identified individual. And oftentimes, it's rejection that kind of tips them over, and so trying to build in supportive relationships.
So the idea is that you really want to change the culture.
Change the culture of the school. And there are some schools that don't really have to change very much. They're already there. But there's also some that it's a very competitive culture.
Do you think there's enough therapy available for young adolescents these days? I mean, and I know that's a whole topic we could talk about ad nauseum, but what's your take on that?
No, my take is there is not, particularly in towns like Syracuse, in which we don't have a tremendous amount of therapists that are available.
For adolescents.
And for adolescents, for children, even for adults. There are very long waiting lists at clinics around town, and so the answer to that, I can give you a very clear no. There is not enough resources available.
And that would play a role, obviously. Earlier intervention, recognizing these kids and changing the culture is what I'm hearing from you.
That's the goal.
Very little bit of time. Is security, higher security, the answer in your mind?
I don't believe that that's the answer. Again, you're getting an opinion. I'm not aware of any data suggesting it is or isn't the answer.
The NRA would like us to think it's the answer.
Yeah. Well, I'm not aware of any data. I think that's probably opinion as well.
Well, I want to thank you. This has been very enlightening for me. I appreciate your coming in. I'm sure our listeners appreciate all this information. My guest has been Dr. Kevin Anschel, Associate Professor of Psychology and the Director of Clinical Psychology Program at Syracuse University. He's also an Adjunct Associate Professor of Psychiatry at Upstate Medical University. I'm Linda Cohen, and this is Upstate's HealthLink on Air.